Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome back in on 670 The Score. Matt Spiegel here with you for the next couple hours. And I know the spinners are from Michigan, from Detroit, and yet, Rubber Band Man, it's Philly Soul, because it's the string section, I think. Doug Glanville, who joins us right now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford and Melrose Park. I know they're a Motown band, but why are they so synonymous with Philly Soul? It's that string section in the production, isn't it, Doug?
Now you read my mind every time. I've been playing Spinner's Pandora for weeks now.
Oh,
you know, just jamming. I'm trying to get my 8-year-old daughter locked in on it, and they're fantastic. I love their stuff. And by the way, her name is Sadie. So they have that song Sadie, and we're always on the same page musically, Matt. So just keep it coming.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. So that's a good way to get her in is with her name in there, because my 8-year-old doesn't care about some of the music I play, but if a lyric hits him on the right place, that could work. But that's not why I called. Actually, Doug Glanville, appreciate. Actually, it is one of the reasons I called. Doug Glanville, you'll see him on Marquee coming up here for this Cubs season. Congrats on that. It makes all the sense in the world, Doug. What's your job, your role going to be on that that network as it develops?
Yeah, very excited about it. I mean, just, you know, the analyst role, which is, you know, where I get in the sweet spot. But as we saw when I was at NBC, I wore a lot of hats. I would do pregame and postgame. I wrote a lot of the video essays. And when you're talking about content that's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, effectively, you just, you know, I think it's going to play to my strength of being able to create diverse types of material to share with the Cubs fans. So, but definitely some in-game work, some segments inside, maybe some production within that. And of course, you know, open mic to be able to talk about things to support JD and Len. So very excited about it. And, you know, I think it's going to be a great team. What a great group of people they've assembled, and I'm sure more to come.
Insane. It's like every former Cub who's doing baseball in the media, and certainly all the good ones are gonna be there. It's quite something. Looking forward to that, Doug. But you know, do you think this team has some time here to still make a couple of moves? We've got apparently Steven Souza Jr. Coming in, and I want to get to your New York Times piece about the Astros and baseball's existential crisis. But before that, is there still time for the Cubs to make some changes that could increase their chances in the NL Central?
Yeah, there's time. You have to look at it where teams sometimes see how things come together. I mean, the Cubs certainly still have a very talented team. You know, you saw Darvish and find what he was brought in for last season. And you consider that they're trying to add some pieces in the bullpen. It's supplemental right now. But then, you know, things come together. And all of a sudden, if you have the wherewithal and the power and the financial resources to make moves at the right time before the trade deadline and add those pieces, that often is the difference maker. So they're set up pretty well, and now they just have to execute and play well. And clearly, Theo Epstein is trying to shake it up to do that.
Is it crazy to you that the Chris Bryant grievance has gone on this long? It's like we're in this weird netherworld where I don't think anybody around the game believes the Cubs are going to lose this grievance. And yet, if there were trade conversations or have been trade conversations, no team is going to trade without the clarity of this grievance being finalized. It's really frustrating.
Well, that's the logjam. You know, what do? You don't know what your assets are. You know what you're owing. You know, they're kind of in no man's land. And, look, it's a compelling discussion. And with this type of grievance, the implications are huge because teams are now looking like, wait a minute, like all these teams that, you know, sort of have this economic system where like, okay, we'll keep you back for a couple weeks and then we'll bring up, you see the White Sox, for example, trying to, you know, sign guys ahead of time now, like don't even want to mess with it. So it has huge implications, and there's no question that they're making every argument they can. So they're being very careful to make sure they make a good decision around it.
I just tweeted the link a couple of moments ago, this New York Times piece that Doug wrote about baseball's existential crisis is really interesting. And it's, I feel like this sign stealing situation has been a prism by which you can see all the different feelings of organizations, of players, of and if fans too, of like all, your morality comes through as you end up talking about this, as people go after Mike Fiers or do not go after him and all of that. It's really, has it more than anything, has it just exposed kind of a culture that has always been there in baseball about pushing the rules to the very limits and trying to be as good as you can possibly be?
Well, it has, Matt, and part of it's also combined that with the constant evolution and revolution of technology. That's the collision, because there's no question that sign stealing is part of the game. That's why you have signs, right? You're trying to disguise it. And back in the day, when it was more of an analog version of it, okay, I see you're tipping your cap. That means you're throwing a curveball. The catcher's crouching high. I can steal second base because he's looking to block a ball in the dirt. Whatever it is, there's all kinds of discussion that's very above board that players use to, you know, take their baseball instincts for reading signs, stealing signs to help their team. That's part of it. But now you add the technological components to it and real time, and then sort of the ethics issue around, oh, we're going to steal the feed and we're going to bring it right into the dugout, knowing that that was completely against the rules of the game. Now that's where everything gets exposed. And it's easy to make the argument, well, people are always stealing signs, and that's true. But it's the combination of that that slanted this pitcher-hitter dynamic. And keep in mind, like, I never believed this type. Once I kind of understood the whole picture, there's no way this scheme would have sustained, because there's no pitcher that's going to stand by and say this is actually good. Because even though you're on the Astros or whatever team that's a beneficiary, first of all, you don't know you're going to win. All right, you don't know you're going to win a World Series. And what it does is it delegitimizes your profession as a pitcher, mm-hmm. because you're slanting it to the hitters. You're slanting everything. The hitters are laughing all the way to arbitration. This is great. But the pitchers are like, wait a minute, this isn't great. I may be on the Astros, but you're tipping pitches. And one day I may be in the other dugout, because it's very rare you get to stay with an organization. And then your bike fires and you play for the A's and you're really trying to beat them to get through the postseason. Now it's very clear. So I didn't think it was going to last very long where pitchers would stay silent. Hitters may have a longer chance to do so, but organizations change too much personnel for this to be possible. So there's no question it brings together, you know, loyalty versus, you know, league rules versus fair play. And it all comes together over this sign-stealing controversy.
And that's why it's so layered and so fascinating to a lot of us. It's this line that from your piece, the real consequence of the Astros scandal may be to stoke the feeling of helplessness we all feel with technology at times, always a step behind, dismissive of the finger-wagging dinosaur who's lecturing about the past, arrogantly pushing in the new era. It's well-written, well-said. I love that hitters can go from the dugout to the video room and dissect how a pitcher is attacking them and figure it out between that and the next at bat. But that said, if part of the unintended consequence of having the video room that close and that accessible for that purpose and for the purpose of a manager's challenge of replay, if the unintended consequence is the incredible accessibility of visual cheating like this, I think baseball has to step away from some of the available technology. What do you think?
Well, they went off the honor system, and that was, you know, although noble, probably not the best system, clearly. And, you know, you recognize and you make a great point. There's an artistry. There's a skill to dissecting pitchers. I played with players like Bobby Abreu, who could read when the guy, you know, tilted his cap, what he was throwing. I played with Paul Byrd, who, by the way, called his signs himself from the mound. And the catcher had decoy signs. because he basically partly because he couldn't see. That was, but there was, you know, and Bobby Abreu, by the way, picked that up. So there's no question that that is a part of the game, and it's going to continue to develop as we gain more insight with analytics and all that. But it's, once again, the abuse of technology that was trusted that players would do the right thing by this, who now took it to the next level. And keep in mind, what is existential? What's the crisis? Is baseball's coming up against, you got the PEDs, which is still lingering and creating question marks in the game today. You know, you have gambling and the hit king with Pete Rose and all these other questions. And now you have the sign stealing. And the problem, why it makes it existential, is if you're going to reward the game through fair play, then you have to attack this. Because fair play still has to be the pathway by which you can achieve greatness in the sport. Otherwise, you don't have a sport. Because you leave it to people that are going to take shortcuts, and then it becomes who has the best pharmacist, who has the best hacker, mm-hmm. you know, who has the best bookie, who has, you know, like, look, then you're not really playing a game, you're just playing a video game, basically. And that's the existential crisis. You have to create avenues by which fair play is rewarded and it's equal. And when you have this type of issue, that type of abuse ripples, and that's why they have to take a very strong stance against it.
I agree. And it's got to keep coming now. I don't know what the Red Sox punishment is going to be as these players are starting to talk. And Dallas Keuchel talked a little bit yesterday here at Sox Fest about it. Maybe other organizations are going to be exposed. The commissioner's office has to keep going so we don't deal with the decades long effect of the PEDs that, as you say, still linger. I mean, you know, Bonds and Clemens still on the Hall of Fame ballot at just below 70%, apparently not going to get above before their final year, that kind of stuff. It took a decade before the Mitchell Report and Congress got involved, before we got anywhere on that. Because they're not going after players, this doesn't have to be collectively bargained. The commissioner can bring the hammer, as he did against the Astros, and keep bringing it. I hope he will keep bringing it. Do you think he will?
Well, he has to. First of all, he has no choice but to keep bringing it. That's for starters. The reality today that's different than PEDs is once again, actually the technology, the speed of information, the social media, they are going to be on the accelerator all through this and holding teams accountable. And sometimes it goes off the rails. True, it's not a perfect system, a perfect response. But it's important to kind of pay attention to this, because now, you know, investigating the Red Sox and other teams. And it's scary for the league, because you don't know what you're going to find. You don't know. If you tell, you know, every player in Major League Baseball through PEDs, you don't know how far this rabbit hole goes. But that's the only way you're going to really get to be able to sort of clean it up and redirect it. And it's going to be very uncomfortable for a while, because, once again, as you mentioned, the question marks remain from PEDs to this day. Guy hits 50 home runs, like, well, I don't know. And that's the effect of really selfish choices, right? Individual choices. But now you're dealing with team schemes and groupthink and this single organism mentality that's now undercutting the integrity of the game. And that's a different kind of problem, in some ways larger, when you talk about what a championship needs to mean.
This the true damaging legacy of PEDs is that we missed and kind of dismissed the genuine improvement of a lot of people. You know, it's like, and I don't know for sure that a guy like Jose Bautista was clean in terms of PEDs. But what I do know is that he and Dwayne Murphy made like very specific swing changes in Toronto that were, before we were all saying launch angle or contact point, that's what Jose Bautista was doing. He pulled everything. All of a sudden he pulled everything and tried to hit everything in the air, and his home runs exploded. And I was in so many conversations at the time, Doug, saying, you don't know that he's juiced. Stop saying that. You don't know. And we missed stories like that along the way. And that's why you got to get this under control, so we can celebrate when sluggers do become better contact hitters. We can celebrate when guys do figure things out or do read things better. Right now, I don't know what to celebrate from the Astros' last 5 years, and it's disappointing to me.
Right, it's devastating. It is, because you don't know what is authentic. And by the way, the innocent gets swept up in the guilty.
Yep.
That's the selfishness of it. I mean, look, I played all through the PED era, you know, and it's like, nobody knows what's real. And that is the real serious consequence. And this is no different. It's like, maybe it's not an individual, but you're looking at a team like, well, what are they doing? What are they doing? Yes, it's something that's gone on forever in an analog version or even video under control. But the reins of just the free range to just be able to now abuse it is where the problems lie. And it's going to take quite a bit to bring back. But I think there's enough teams and players that are outraged by it that really are going to call it. But it's going to take some watershed moments for it to continue.
All right. So look, my little two-step process to clean it up, and of course it's more than two steps, but I've simplified it because I'm a talk show host, is that, number one, I want to get rid of those video rooms. I'm sorry, the manager's challenge is gone. You've got a fifth umpire on every crew, an eye in the sky who sits in the press box, and all nine innings are treated like the last 2 minutes of an NFL game. If he sees something that merits review, he says, let's review it. That's number one. Number two, the death of visual signals. It is archaic, as you write. It is a charming clash of tradition and modern life. But I'm sorry, you have voided your right for visual signals, and now we go to a wristband that goes to a sensor on another wristband for the pitcher, something like that, that is unhackable. What do you think about this as possibility?
Well, I'll start with the second part. That's going to happen. Eventually, there's going to be more direct. You need technology to manage technology. I mean, I have an Apple Watch. Why do I have an Apple Watch? Not just because it's cool, but because I'm managing my phone. You know, it's like, I don't want to look at my phone because the alert, you know. So we all are trapped sometimes in these circles. And some of it makes us look back, say, wait a minute, maybe I just need to start over in some respect. But baseball, you know, the cat's out of the bag. You have to figure out how to marry this in a responsible way. So the signs, you know, the old fingers, you know, between the catcher's legs to call signs is going to be, you know, probably by the wayside as in a matter of time. And it's unfortunate on one end, but it's also just, you know, where we're getting to. So and as for the umpires, that sounds like a sound idea to me. I mean, I think there's ways you can you know, allow the umpires just to do what they do. Challenge, I understand teams make the decision, say, all right, well, I'm going to challenge this call. That's important to a certain degree, but you got to make sure it's not taken advantage of. So maybe you could put the player that's responsible for challenging up farther away, you know, in the locker room or something, and then they could signal down and say, hey, you know, I don't know, there's something. But clearly having it in the dugout or too close has become a problem, and they have to change that.
Doug Glanville is our guest for another minute or two here on 670 The Score. Let's go to the other side of town for a second. White Sox going to challenge for the American League Central, Doug?
Yes, absolutely.
I think they're right there, right? I mean, as constructed, I believe in the Twins more than some. And then the Indians lost Kluber, but they've still got plenty of pitching. But White Sox hopes are high in this town right now.
They should be. I mean, you just go back to last year. A lot of talent through that lineup and great improvement. And, you know, you don't want to face those guys. I mean, Moncada, Anderson, Abreu's back, who's like an RBI machine. They got some young guys in the outfield that are coming through. So, and some arms. Now, you know, these types of acquisitions can be key because you get experience and you get guys that know how to sort of lead a rotation. And then you groom guys that are right on the cusp of greatness. They got a couple of good young pitchers that just have big years. And that's a whole different equation. So there was times that bullpen was really lights out. They had the talent there. They just had to kind of put it together. So I see them being really dangerous this season. So there's reason to be excited in Chicago in general, north and south side.
And back on the north side for a final question. We've spent so little time in this offseason talking about David Ross. It's fascinating because of the Cubs' inactivity, because of money issues, because of Marquis, because of Bryant trade rumors and all the other stuff. I think that Theo Epstein and company genuinely believe there is more to get out of the players they have. And not that that is directly necessarily a fault of Joe Maddon, but it is natural for human beings to reach a level of complacency. And I know they would hate that word. In fact, I said that word to Jason Hayward last week and he hated it, but there's a natural human effect of the same circumstances and success kind of possibly putting a ceiling on what you can do. I think it is possible that David Ross is going to get more out of these guys than we've seen over the last couple of years. Do you?
It's a fresh look, and it allows Theo Epstein to have more of a direct line in now what is this, you know, constant revolution in analytics. And, you know, David Ross is someone that's going to be able to influence, but also is being able to be influential, you know, he has a respect of his players. You know, he's a teammate in certain regards, but also he's open to ideas to work because he doesn't have that long-standing experience that can be great on one hand, but also tough to change. So that's the big advantage of, say, of what David Ross can bring. And there's no question that, look, the Cubs, in this day and age, it's very tough to create this sort of dynasty because every rock of value is overturned. Every stone is looked under to find some edge, and then you have to stay healthy. All has to align. And as great as the Astros were last night, sign-stealing or not, great, they were, you know, a talented team. Washington, who was a huge underdog, still beat them. Right, so it is really tough to repeat, but the chances to do that sometimes comes from a new look and just a new persona, and that's what Theo Epstein is banking on.
Doug, thanks for the time, man. Appreciate it. Enjoy your weekend, and good luck with the spinners and your 8-year-old. Maybe I'll be around, or could it be I'm falling in love? Something's gonna reach you.
Rubber band man, there's so many hits. Spinners, check it out. Greatest hits.
Thank you, Doug. Appreciate you.
All right, Matt. Thanks, man.
You got it. As Doug Glanville of the Marquee Network and New York Times and more. Check out his piece in the New York Times on baseball's existential crisis.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.